those insecurities that have held me down for so long. I can't say I've found a cure for these, but at least I know them, so they're not so strong. They look for your dreams in heaven, but what the hell are you supposed to do when they can't? Songs, and some of them are about you. Now I know there's no way I can write those songs. Believe me, I would not lie, you hurt my pride. And I guess there's a road without you. She once said there's a way back for every man, so here I am.
Last night I had the strangest dream I've ever.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At midnight on Sunday, nearly 800 auto workers went on strike in Shelbyville, Kentucky. Represented by the United Auto Workers Local 2383, the workers set up a picket line outside of Thyssen Krupp Bud, an automotive parts supplier that provides parts to two Ford Motor Company assembly plants nearby. The union and company have had more than 20 meetings, but have been unable to reach an agreement on wages and benefits. Officials with the UAW say the strike could go on for some time.
The SEIU is in the midst of a major organizing campaign to represent thousands of condominium workers employed by Continental Group in Miami. Rob Schuler, president and organizing director of SEIU Local 11, says Continental is running an aggressive anti-union campaign trying to intimidate workers.
They've reacted by, you know, in typical fashion, by firing people, threatening people, intimidating, transferring them, you know, finding excuses to get rid of them.
Schuler says this Florida organizing drive is part of a national SEIU strategy to expand into southern and western states like Florida and Texas. He says these Florida condo workers need help dealing with very stressful jobs that often include hurricane evacuation plans and caring for senior citizen residents.
Everybody in these buildings is supervising these workers. They've got, you know, they're being watched on camera, they're being watched by condominium boards, they're being watched by contractors, you know, that employ them in the building, and then they've got every resident, you know, wanting them to do this or that, and if, you know, they don't jump to it, you know, they're under the gun. They need some changes.
A handful of taxpayers in Michigan are seeking a legal challenge to stop Ann Arbor Public Schools from providing same-sex benefits. The 17 taxpayers working with a religious law center are asking the Michigan Court of Appeals to apply a state constitutional amendment passed in November to a suit that failed in 2003. The original ruling was made before the current amendment was implemented, and the Washtenaw County Circuit Court said the plaintiffs had no right to sue. The taxpayers claim the amendment prevents employers from giving benefits to gay couples because it would be recognizing their union as a marriage. The city of Ann Arbor has filed a friend of the court brief in support of the school district.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. So just how cheap is Chinese labor? A Bureau of Labor Statistics consultant in China has concluded that factory wages in China averaged 64 cents an hour in 2002. In the U.S., it was $22.11. Average hourly wages for foreign factory workers rose 12% in 2003, but in the U.S., they rose just 4%. China has roughly 38 million factory workers, and its cities another 71 million work in manufacturing outside cities. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It's time for another trip into the far, far, far out world of free enterprise. Today, Spaceship Hightower takes you into the often confusing world of food marketing, with Consumer Reports magazine serving as our guide. Let's first probe a new product being promoted under a brand name spelled G-R-A-P-P-L-E. You would naturally pronounce that grapple, as in to wrestle with. But the label instructs us to say grape-L. By whatever name, what is it? An apple. A tortured apple that's been given an artificial grape flavor. The company says, the apple is bathed through a patented process, and in a few days the entire apple takes on the essence and mouth-watering taste of Concord grapes. Excuse me? If you want the flavor of grapes, why not buy some? Speaking of buying, the price of 4 grape-Ls is $3 more than 4 unadulterated apples. Go figure. On to an old favorite, the Hershey Chocolate Bar. This sweet treat has long been 7 ounces in weight, but Hershey has now quietly reduced it to 6 ounces. You wouldn't notice getting shorted, for Hershey packagers cleverly kept the 6-ounce wrapper the exact same size as the old 7-ouncer. They also kept the price the same. But when it comes to raw chutzpah in the category of product dilution, Hershey is a piker compared to Tropicana and Minute Maid, the two top purveyors of processed orange juice. Both are marketing light versions of their juices, with Tropicana boasting on its carton that light and healthy original has one-half less sugar and calories than regular orange juice. What's the trick? Both companies are simply giving you less orange juice, replacing it with water and artificial sweeteners. Yes, they charge you the same for the watered-down version as for the 100% juice. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about the fast-moving world of commercial gotchas, check out ConsumerReports.org.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
We made it! 35 minutes ago, walked into the door to the studio, straight from the airport, flew from Palm Springs to Los Angeles tonight, Los Angeles to Chicago overnight, got in at 5 in the morning, picked up the flight from Chicago to Burlington, Vermont, and then the hour drive over to Montpelier, where it is raining here in the People's Republic on top of about 4 inches of snow, which means everything is absolute glare ice. So the most dangerous part of the trip, I think, was stepping out of the car. Anyhow, we're back. I am so glad to be back and to be here with you live. Well, we were live yesterday, but from another part of the country. Isn't it really remarkable when you think about it? Just the technology of transportation, the technology of communications, the fact that there are people downloading this program to their iPods. We're now podcasting. And of course on radio stations all across the country, radiopower.org, White Rose Society, Cable Radio Network, on at Sirius Satellite, on and on it goes. Maybe it's because I was one of these techno geeks as a kid, with the pocket protector and the slide rule. I'm just amazed by it. I'm sorry. George W. Bush's approval rating rebounds after the Iraq vote. This in today's USA Today. Turns out, Karl Rove was right. Back in 2002, when he went down to Crawford, Texas, and said to George W., you know, I'm paraphrasing wildly here and perhaps speculating a bit, but this is based on Bob Woodward's book, you know, if you've got a good war going in 2004, you're going to win that election because no president of the United States in the history of this country has ever failed to lose an election during a time of war, especially if his friends own the voting machines. That's a whole other discussion, but so here we have Americans gave President Bush's highest job approval rating in more than a year and show cautious optimism about Iraq in a USA Today CNN Gallup poll taken shortly before or shortly after the historic Iraq elections. In a reversal from a month ago, majorities now say that going to war was not a mistake. We're up to 57% approval, the highest since 59% when he tracked down Saddam Hussein, or at least he said he did. The Kurds are still saying that they found him and they delivered him to us, but that's their story and this is ours. 55% say the United States did not make a mistake sending troops to Iraq, up from 47% last month. 53% say things are going well or moderately well in Iraq, compared with 40% last month. 64% say it's very or somewhat likely a democratic form of government will be established in Iraq. That up from 47% last month. You know, this people think that an election means democracy in America. I mean, it's just got to be. Maybe they weren't noticing when Saddam Hussein was holding his elections. Vote for me or no. And by the way, we know your name. Not uncommon, by the way, in that part of the world. 50% say they approve of how Bush is handling Iraq, up from 43% last month. 48% say they disapprove, down from 56% last month. And even Republicans are getting a bounce off this thing. They're receiving a 56% favorable rating compared with 46% for Democrats, 10-point advantage, up from 6 points in September. This according to USA Today and the Gallup poll report. Now, this, of course, was done days after the elections in the State of the Union address. The elections that George W. Bush spent the better part of 2 years fighting. He didn't want the elections. The administration didn't want the elections. Bremer didn't want the elections. Sistani and Sauter wanted the elections because they knew that they would take control in a majority environment. And we knew that they would take control in a majority environment. And that's why Bremer's plan, the Bush administration plan, was to have caucuses. You know, like they do in Iowa, a caucus where you get a bunch of people together in a room and they basically discuss and they go round and round and round and talk and talk and talk until finally they come up with either a majority vote or a consensus and say, okay, this is what we're doing. So in other words, a small number of people is deciding something for an entire state. And just by coincidence, Paul Bremer was going to handpick all the people who were involved in the caucuses in each of the 18 districts in Iraq where the caucuses were to be held. Well, within a month of our invasion of Iraq, Sauter, the young Shiite cleric, who a year ago we were saying we're going to track him down and kill him, looks now like he might have taken two or three of the districts of Iraq. But in any case, a year ago, we were going to kill Sauter. He was a nasty guy. Remember the Sauter's militia? They were killing our soldiers in Sauter City and other parts of Iraq. So here we have a situation where Sauter is saying he was actually holding elections. Actually holding elections. He held nearly 100 elections within 3 months of the time that we arrived. He just went out and did it. Said, okay, we're going to hold democratic elections. And most of them were for communities and towns because, see, this was in the Shiite area. The Shiite area for, you know, ever since the 40s, ever since we installed, or the 50s, since we installed Saddam Hussein as the strongman to control Iraq, the Shiites in their own communities had had mayors and chiefs of police and judges who were all Sunnis. That being Saddam's tribe, but that also being the predominant strain of Islam around the world is Sunni Islam. The Shias are very much a majority in Islam. You find them in Iraq, find some of them in Syria, some of them in Lebanon, a bunch of them in Iraq. I'm sorry, in Iran, as I said, yeah, I should have said, a bunch of them in Iraq. But that's about it. And this super toxic form of Islam, Wahhabism, started by Ibn bin Wahhab back in the 20s and 30s, and funded and nurtured and nursed and promoted by the Saudi royal family, which is the sect. It's sort of like you say Protestantism. Okay, well, which Protestantism are you talking about? Martin Luther's separation from the church when he nailed his declarations on the wall of the church in, what was it, Bitburg? Or are you talking about King Henry VIII when he said that he didn't want anything to do with the Pope because the Pope wouldn't let him get divorced? I mean, there were these two Protestant splits. But nonetheless, within Protestantism, there's hundreds, thousands perhaps, of individual, you know, there's the Church of the Nazarene and the Methodist Church, and, you know, John Wesley started his thing, and there was the Puritans who took over England, actually, for a few years, and then the British kicked them out and said, we want our king back, we don't want a theocracy anymore, and so they had to come to America, and they took over a good chunk of Massachusetts, and causing Ben Franklin to flee down to Philadelphia. This, by the way, was one of the big battles, one of the big problems that George Washington had, and Adams and Jefferson as well. Wasn't so much for Adams, because he knew these guys. He was not one of them, but they perceived him as one of them. He was from Massachusetts. I believe he was a Congregationalist. And they wanted to establish a theocracy in Massachusetts, nearly seceded from the Union several times during the presidencies of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. So anyhow, there's all these different sects of Protestantism. Similarly, there are a few sects of Sunni Islam. And the one that's the equivalent of our Puritans, the Puritans who believed you shouldn't dance, you shouldn't drink alcohol, women were not allowed to speak, they had to have their heads covered at all times. These folks are still out there, by the way. They're very much a minority now in the modern world. But they controlled, for example, Salem, Massachusetts, the most notorious city. They controlled most of Massachusetts for some time. So within the Sunni world, you've got the Wahhabists. Within the Shia world, you've got the Iranian mullahs and all this. The Taliban, by the way, was a spinoff of Sunnis. This was, you know, they were good buddies with Osama bin Laden, who's a Sunni. So, yeah, a little background there. So here we have Agence France-Presse, the French press agency. Iraq's Shiite leader, Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani. Now, he's the guy who actually forced the elections, because Sadr had over 100 elections in all these communities all across southern Iraq after we toppled the Saddam government. And, of course, you know, there's a power vacuum there. The Sunnis had been kicked out. In fact, they were being hunted. So Sadr said, cool, let's get some of our guys in there, and actually held elections. And there were a couple of situations. There was one in particular, one city where we went in and said, okay, we're going to install our guy. Bremer had picked a whole bunch of people that were going to be the transitional government. We're going to install our guy as mayor of this city. And they said, oh, no, you don't. We just elected him. And there was a battle. I mean, there was an actual battle. And we backed off, and that guy's still mayor of this city. So here we have Iraq's Shiite leader, Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani, and another top cleric staked out a radical demand that Islam be the sole source of legislation in the country's new constitution. One cleric issued a statement setting out the position that the spiritual leader of Iraq made it known straight away that he backed demands for the Quran to be the reference point for legislation. Now, we do have a movement in the United States that's very similar to this. It's called the Dominionist Movement. We're going to be at the top of our second hour interviewing one of the nation's leading experts on Dominionism, and you're going to be absolutely shocked at how deeply the theocrats, that is, those people who believe that government should be run by God or people who say they talk to God or who know how to correctly interpret the Word of God exclusively, and that everybody else's interpretation is wrong, the Dominionists are taking over our government just like the Wahhabists tried to take over the government of Saudi Arabia, and now the Shia are taking over the government of Iraq. This is remarkable stuff here. We are cranking back to the Crusades. And Americans think it's just wonderful. Oh, those elections, they were just great. And I think it's a marvelous thing that we had elections. Maybe. We will see what comes out of it.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time. Uh-oh. All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. The top Shiite clerics, emboldened by what they perceive as a massive turnout by their followers for the coalition of Shiite religious parties, this by Thananas Kambanas, article in the Boston Globe. A massive turnout by their followers for the coalition of Shiite religious parties have already directed their attention to advocating for an Islamic constitution. The clerics of Najaf, who orchestrated the Shiite political party coalition, say they expected a constitutional debate between hardcore Islamists who want Quranic law to be the constitution's primary source and moderate Islamists. This is quite remarkable. Public freedoms. Here's a quote from Mohammed al-Habudi, 42. He says, public freedom should be regulated based on the country's Islamic character, citing as an example the sale of alcohol. It's the second largest city of Iraq has already essentially degenerated into an Islamic republic. Women who go out dressed in anything other than black from head to toe risk being arrested or beaten. And men who consume or sell alcohol risk the same, being dragged around in off the back of a truck in their underwear and humiliated. The same as is happening in Afghanistan, by the way. Welcome back, folks. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website. You want to drop into the chat room, I'm in there today, hanging out with the folks in the chat room, and you're welcome to join us. Just click chat room from tomhartman.com, and it'll take you there. Tom in Oklahoma City on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Tom?
Well, I just want to make a few points and just see what you'd say. I'm in the reserves. I served in Iraq for almost a year and a half. And I can tell you, I'm having psychological problems really bad.
Okay.
And I'll make 2 points. One, I lost my job when I came home.
Yeah.
According to downsizing and stuff like that, I lost my job.
Yeah, it happened to a good friend of mine who spent a year in the reserves in Iraq as well. It's not uncommon. I'm sorry to hear it.
Well, I appreciate it. I have a family. I got 4 kids, and I just found out here last week that all my psychological bills that I've been having, you know, seeing psychologists and stuff, they've all been sent back to me now.
In other words, the government's not going to cover it.
No, because I'm out active duty right now. I'm a reserve now, so they sent all my bills back to me to make me pay them.
Yeah, and with George's new budget, he's trying to weasel out of even more of this stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm talking about, well, you know, what about all these guys that are coming home with psychological problems like me? You know, I mean, I saw a buddy of mine get blown to pieces in a roadside bombing, and I was lucky to live. He got blown to pieces, and. Well, what are they going to do about that? You know, Bush ain't doing nothing about that. He's more worried about whatever he's doing. And, you know, here I am racking up thousands of dollars of psychological bills, and I'm going to have to pay them all. And, you know, I still haven't found a job. I've been out of work for several months now. And, you know, it's just, I thought that when I joined the reserves, we would be protected on our jobs. According to what I understand, the law is they can't fire you from your job.
Well, yeah, in theory it is. The reality, though, is that if companies are firing a whole bunch of people all at the same time, then they can, I believe, they can fire reservists as well. And you know, the bottom line, Tom, and I don't mean this to sound harsh, is that you're not a member of Bush's constituency. You're not one of the rich who show up to his gala balls, and so, you know, unfortunately, that's the folks who get left behind. Are you familiar, by the way, Tom? I just have to ask you real quickly. Are you familiar with EMDR? You ever heard of EMDR?
No, sir, I have never heard of that.
EMDR is an extraordinarily powerful psychological technique for dealing with trauma. And I'm not giving you medical advice, but you may want to spend a few minutes checking it out. EMDR, eye motion desensitization and reintegration. EMDR. But, Tom, I wish you well. It's a horrible story you're telling, and I know it's not limited to you. These are very, very rough times for our veterans. Thanks for the call, Tom. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Good luck and Godspeed.
Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At midnight on Sunday, nearly 800 auto workers went on strike in Shelbyville, Kentucky. Represented by the United Auto Workers Local 2383, the workers set up a picket line outside of Thyssen Krupp Bud, an automotive parts supplier that provides parts to two Ford Motor Company assembly plants nearby. The union and company have had more than 20 meetings, but have been unable to reach an agreement on wages and benefits. Officials with the UAW say the strike could go on for some time.
The SEIU is in the midst of a major organizing campaign to represent thousands of condominium workers employed by Continental Group in Miami. Rob Schuler, president and organizing director of SEIU Local 11, says Continental is running an aggressive anti-union campaign trying to intimidate workers.
They've reacted by, you know, in typical fashion, by firing people, threatening people, intimidating, transferring them, you know, finding excuses to get rid of them.
Schuler says this Florida organizing drive is part of a national SEIU strategy to expand into southern and western states like Florida and Texas. He says these Florida condo workers need help dealing with very stressful jobs that often include hurricane evacuation plans and caring for senior citizen residents.
Everybody in these buildings is supervising these workers. They've got, you know, they're being watched on camera, they're being watched by condominium boards, they're being watched by contractors, you know, that employ them in the building, and then they've got every resident, you know, wanting them to do this or that, and if, you know, they don't jump to it, they're under the gun. They need some changes.
A handful of taxpayers in Michigan are seeking a legal challenge to stop Ann Arbor Public Schools from providing same-sex benefits. The 17 taxpayers working with a religious law center are asking the Michigan Court of Appeals to apply a state constitutional amendment passed in November to a suit that failed in 2003. The original ruling was made before the current amendment was implemented, and the Washtenaw County Circuit Court said the plaintiffs had no right to sue. The taxpayers claim the amendment prevents employers from giving benefits to gay couples because it would be recognizing their union as a marriage. The city of Ann Arbor has filed a friend of the court brief in support of the school district.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. So just how cheap is Chinese labor? A Bureau of Labor Statistics consultant in China has concluded that factory wages in China averaged 64 cents an hour in 2002. In the U.S., it was $22.11. Average hourly wages for foreign factory workers rose 12% in 2003, but in the U.S., they rose just 4%. China has roughly 38 million factory workers in its cities. Another 71 million work in manufacturing outside cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Tell me, George, if there's any damn way that there'll ever be a day I can get on a plane without worrying about the next maniac trying to pay me back just 'cause you're half insane. Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one. Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run. Yes, George, I hope you're having fun.
And as George W. Bush now is proposing cuts in veterans' benefits, an increase in copays on medication for veterans, a fee for veterans to get into the program, which will effectively lock out some of the more expensive veterans that the administration has to deal with in VA hospitals, that is homeless vets, which constitute a significant chunk of the Vietnam and Gulf War I vets are homeless. Or you could flip that around and say a significant chunk of the homeless people in America are Vietnam and Gulf War I vets, although startlingly, perhaps, I don't recall if it's now the largest percentage or if it's like a third, it's somewhere between a third and a half of homeless people are actually single mothers with children. But in any case, now that this is going on, Tom raises an interesting question and for a moment I put my psychotherapist hat on and recommended what I think is the best form of therapy for, didn't recommend it, but pointed it out, the best form of therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder, which is EMDR. It's actually used by the Veterans Administration. And, in fact, a very, very close friend of mine does it for the Israeli Army. We were giving a presentation together in London some years ago and at a conference, a psychology conference. And we were sitting in my room talking, and Stuart is his name, and he's a psychologist from Jerusalem. And my phone rang. He was his wife trying to track him down. There had just been that bombing in the pizzeria in Israel. This was, 4 or 5 years ago? And a whole bunch of people were dead, and they needed him immediately because he knew how to do this kind of therapy, and they try and do it very quickly with people, although you can do it years down the road. And in fact, I was teaching a workshop on something very similar to this just this weekend in California at the Winter Brain Conference. This is good stuff. So, Tom, make a note, EMDR. The other thing is that Congressman Bernie Sanders has gone out of his way on this program on a number of occasions to say if any veteran has any problem, of course the protocol is that you should call your own member of Congress and try and get them to do something, but a lot of members of Congress just don't care about the average guy. You call Tom DeLay, the question's going to be, I would guess, how much did you contribute to our campaign last year? Particularly a lot of the Republican members, but there's no shortage of Democrats who are in this same cycle or same boat or whatever. But number one, try to contact your member of Congress. They're the ones who are the closest to the ground, or your United States senators, and tell them that you're having this problem, you're not getting the services you need, and that you'd like some resolution right away. Here's the telephone number. This is the main switchboard at Congress, and if you don't get satisfaction quickly from your own member of Congress, call Bernie Sanders. Tell him that you listen to the Tom Hartman program. You've heard him on our he's on every Friday afternoon, our Brunch with Bernie segment, and tell him that you've heard the program, assuming that you have, and he will, if not him, then he's got several people in his office who do nothing but deal with this kind of stuff. Bernie is one of the few members of Congress whose office is entirely driven by the need to meet his constituents' needs. The reason for this is because when lobbyists show up, he kicks their butts out of the office. so he doesn't have to have six people sitting around schmoozing with lobbyists all day and collecting checks and whatnot. They show up, he throws them out, and that frees up his entire congressional staff to work with people like you and me, people who actually have needs. Here's the phone number for the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It's area code 212, that, of course, Washington, D.C., area code 212-224-3121. That's the main switchboard. You can ask for anybody from Congressman Sanders to Nancy Pelosi to Harry Reid to John Kerry to George W. Bush. You won't get them. You'll get somebody in their office, but it's close enough. In Bernie's case, you might actually even get Bernie. But this is the switchboard. You just say to the switchboard, and if you don't know your member of Congress, you just say to the switchboard, "Hi, I'm from Oklahoma, and I'm not sure who my member of Congress is, but I would like to speak with that person. Can you tell me who it might be?" And they will ask you where you live and connect you. Or if they don't know and they don't have the time to go through that, then you can say, "Well, would you please connect me with one of my senators?" They will know who the senators from Oklahoma are, and that senator can tell you who your congressman is. The number again, area code 212-224-3121. Don't give up on this, Tom. Keep fighting this thing. And not just you, but all the veterans in America, people who put their lives on the line for the rest of us, people who went to Iraq or didn't go to Iraq for that matter, people who signed up, who joined up, believing that they were doing it to serve their country and did so. A noble and extraordinary work. And now many of them are the victims of Bush's lies and now his efforts to cut veterans' benefits so that he can have his tax cuts for the wealthy. Which is, it brings us back to that situation. By the way, let me just wrap up this Iraq thing real quickly. I just wanted to make this point for you. I think it's some interesting things here that people ought to know. This from the New York Times yesterday. A two-thirds majority vote against the Constitution. See, there's 18 provinces in Iraq. And if any three provinces say, "We don't like the Constitution," then it doesn't get passed. This is pretty dramatic. A two-thirds majority vote against the Constitution in any three of Iraq's 18 provinces could block final approval. Now, why did they put that in? They put that in because the Kurds control three provinces. And they wanted to have a constitution where the Kurds felt protected. They didn't want the Kurds staging an uprising. The reason that they didn't want the Kurds staging an uprising was because the Kurds, long, long time ago, they had independent Kurdistan. In fact, a very dear friend of mine, Gottfried Mueller, designed the flag for independent Kurdistan back during World War II that is used to this day. He was parachuted into Kurdistan. He was a German. He was in the German army. And he was parachuted into Kurdistan, immediately arrested by the Iranians who controlled the area at the time and the British. He was out of uniform. He was a spy. The Iranians sentenced him to death by hanging. The British sentenced him to death by firing squad. He spent the rest of the war sitting in a cell in the desert waiting to die after having been brutally beaten. And he looks back on it and says it was a great blessing because he never had to kill anybody. He got sucked up in the war. A lot of people just got drafted, got dragged into things. And he got sent down there because he had been in the Middle East before. He spoke several Middle Eastern languages. He speaks Arabic, he speaks Hebrew, he speaks a little bit of Farsi. He speaks fluent French, German, Italian, English, and he's a pretty amazing guy. Anyway, the Kurds, and the big concern about the Kurds is that there's a whole bunch of Kurds still left over in Turkey. When, after World War I, they redrew the regions, and after the Ottoman Empire fell in 1918, as I recall, the Western powers got together and redrew the maps of the area. And this, of course, was the first mistake. Iraq was originally three provinces of Turkey, a Shiite province, a Sunni province, and a Kurdish province, and they should have been left as three separate provinces. And if a civil war happens, they will once again become three separate provinces. But anyhow, they put into this place this thing to protect the Kurds from being essentially discriminated against, from being, the odd men out, so that, if the Shia took over. And now it looks like it's going to work to the benefit of the Sunnis. because the Sunnis didn't, you know, participate hugely in this thing. And so any three province, any three provinces where there's a two-thirds majority vote against the Constitution, which is what they're going to be working on for the next year. The whole point of this election was to just elect people who will write the Constitution. And any three provinces can block this thing. And so now everybody's going to have to take the Sunnis very carefully, very seriously, which actually I think is a good thing. And the New York Times makes the point, this is a New York Times editorial, we hope Iraq's Shiite leaders understand the difference between leadership and dominance. And I would add, wouldn't it be nice if George W. Bush understood the difference between leadership and dominance? Tell that to Joe Wilson or to any of the other victims of the Bush administration domestically, I mean political victims. Some pretty amazing stuff. So, but I also wanted to touch on, and of course we have 3 hours here. We have enough time to get into this in some detail, and I've got a lot of questions coming back here. But wanted to get into this whole budget thing because once again, what we're seeing. Oh, and here's a question for you. We'll get into a little later on. Should a smoker be fired? Should an employer have the power to fire a smoker? Let's just stew on that for a minute. Don't call with your answer on that one. I want to get into that a little more detail. But here we have Bush's budget and what he's proposing with his budget. And some pretty substantial, some would say draconian cuts. And at the same time, down in Florida, This may be a sign of things to come. We will see. Down in Florida, they're saying to Jeb Bush, you know, this privatizing thing, we're not sure we're all that excited about it. And see, again, I mentioned this on the radio yesterday, on the program yesterday. And this is the point that we all must understand. This is the point that you want to share with people when you're in the middle of the water cooler wars. When you're talking to your friends and relatives, when you're hanging out with people in the office, the real battle here is not over whether, for example, Social Security is a better or worse way of putting aside money for retirement. Because, first of all, it's not a retirement program, it's an insurance program. Bush would like you to forget that. A full third of the people who take Social Security benefits are not retirees. They're kids who lost their parents. They're people who are disabled. They're the survivors of retirees. If you have just private investments, you know, 401k, SEP, IRA, or a private Social Security account, say it's got enough money for you to live another 5 years after you retire. What happens if you live 6 years? If it was just Social Security, it covers you till you die. It's an insurance program. So anyhow, there's these two worldviews. One is that government, we the people, collectively, we should get together and do some things for ourselves that we just can't do anymore because we don't live in a small town. We don't make our own clothes. We don't make our own food. We don't know the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker. The doc isn't the guy next door who comes over at 2 a.m. when the kid has a fever anymore. We just don't have the knowledge and the resources. And so we collectively get together and say, you know, we're going to require government to do these things and we'll pay for them. Taxes are the price of admission to a civil society. I know Sean Hannity doesn't understand that, but it's a very simple reality. Now, that said, of course, there's a lot of waste and pork going on with regard to our tax dollars, and we want to get rid of that. And that's going to require some very significant reforms. But the things that Bush is cutting are not waste and pork. They have to do with this philosophical divide between those of us who believe that investing in a child's education is a heck of a lot cheaper than investing in prison for them for 40 years. And it makes a better society. And an educated populace makes a better democracy. In fact, it's necessary for democracy. but the Bush budget proposal would cut back on education. There are those of us who have come to the conclusion if you provide early health care to people, prenatal health care, for example, pregnant women, health care to young children, that they're less likely to be sick when they're older. And that's a burden on society, an expense for all of us. So, hey, let's catch it early so it doesn't, you know, down the road, we don't have to pay for it. The conservatives, on the other hand, you're on your own, buddy. So down in Tallahassee, they're starting to talk back to Jeb. I'll tell you about that in a minute. First, let's take a phone call here. Gary in Alabama's on the line. Hey, Gary, what's up? Oh, got to pot you up here, Gary. Gary, I'm sorry we missed your first few words. I didn't have the volume control turned up. What's up?
That's okay. I enjoy your program very much, and I'd like the information you get out, the statistics and so forth. I wish there was some place where a person could tap into that and I could relay it to friends. I'm a truck driver, and I have limited access to the Internet, but I find it very, I don't have a lot of time where I can research this data, and I wish there was someplace possible that this information could be laid out.
Well, I appreciate your concern, Gary, and when I am quoting from articles, I always give the author and the title and the publication, just, you know, not only because it's good manners, but also for folks who want to track it down. The archives will have that. Hopefully one of these days we'll have a big enough staff we can start putting this stuff on the Internet. That would be fun. Gary, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I really do. We got to move along.
It? Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The freezing temperatures of a cold winter can give a big boost to groundwater in the spring. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A typical winter across the northern United States and Canada might include long stretches of temperatures below freezing. In the spring, the soil will thaw and the snow will melt and seep into it. That situation is much different when winter weather bounces above and below freezing, and those warmer winters can lead to flooding and soil erosion. Jamie Douglas is a PhD candidate in engineering at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She works with environmental engineers to study how winter weather patterns relate to snow melt in the spring and the way that moisture seeps into groundwater. Douglas says some winters have cycles where temperatures go up, the snow melts, and then temperatures drop below freezing again. She says the moisture freezes in the ground just below the surface. The result is a layer of soil that's hard as concrete, and moisture runs off it instead of sinking into it. Douglas says when the soil is thoroughly frozen, the snow melt at the end of the winter and the spring rain can cause erosion and even flooding.
In general, people think that infiltration is preferable to runoff because you're not causing any sort of erosion, and the infiltration is going down to become groundwater, and then you're not going to have the flood. What we get a lot of times in spring is big storms, so you're raining on frozen ground, and all that water just runs off. Well, that can flood streams, so it can be a flooding issue, too. The more of that water that you can get into the ground, the better off you are.
Douglas is working on a project to monitor the way melting snow infiltrates into soil across northern Wisconsin. She says the results will help scientists predict groundwater conditions in the future based on winter weather. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on?
Well, I may. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes before the hour. And it's so nice to be back here in the People's Republic of Vermont, even though it's a gray, rainy day. We made it. I have to tell you, you know what the cons are up to. The rolling back and destroying Social Security, as Paul Krugman points out in his op-ed piece in today's New York Times, is just the beginning. Medicare is next, and then Medicaid. All of these New Deal and Great Society programs that the conservatives consider to be socialism, even if the people want them, even if the people are willing to pay for them.
We, the rich, are not willing to pay for them.
That's the bottom line here. And so here's one of the more famous blowhards commenting on this.
So what? Get over it. Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Yeah, we are doing something about that. His policies, like the minimum wage, like unemployment insurance, like Social Security. Yes, we are doing something about that as well. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone. And by the way, the telephone number, apparently I said 212 when I meant to say 202. Telephone number for Congress, 202-224-3121. Phone number for Congress. Gary in Alabama on the line. Hey, Gary, what's up? Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's Bill in Northern New Jersey. And I got to turn the volume control back up again. Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's up, Bill?
Well, I just want to, you know, I just recently discovered you, and I'm really enjoying what I'm hearing. You know, this whole thing with funding and everything else that's going on from the Republican standpoint, they tend to focus on all these social programs that they don't want. However, they just completely ignore, and I'm sure you're aware of this, this thing with the Defense Department that they can't account for 25% of funds.
Yeah, $9.7 billion missing in Iraq, for example.
Well, that's
$1 trillion missing over the last ten years in the
right,
Pentagon.
$2.3 trillion is what the number I've seen.
Yeah.
They tend not to even, you know, look at that figure at all, which is a huge trillions are bigger than billions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A trillion is 1,000 billion.
Yes.
Yep.
And
yep.
You know, I just from my own experience. My father was in the Marine Corps and in the CIA,
And got about 10 seconds here.
Go ahead. I've just been following this my whole life, and it's amazing that they just ignore all these other.
Oh yeah, they're very good. They're very good at it, Bill. Not only that, they're very good at ignoring all the little pork barrel projects, all the little museums, and you know, fluffy things, and cotton candy programs, and all this. There's so much pork coming out of Congress, particularly out of the red states, out of the Republican districts, because they control the House and Senate right now. But if somebody's poor, stick it to them.
To the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Seems when you fly all night on the red eye, your timing's a little off here. Yeah, Tom Hartman here with you. If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At midnight on Sunday, nearly 800 auto workers went on strike in Shelbyville, Kentucky. Represented by the United Auto Workers Local 2383, the workers set up a picket line outside of Thyssen Krupp Bud, an automotive parts supplier that provides parts to two Ford Motor Company assembly plants nearby. The union and company have had more than 20 meetings, but have been unable to reach an agreement on wages and benefits. Officials with the UAW say the strike could go on for some time.
The SEIU is in the midst of a major organizing campaign to represent thousands of condominium workers employed by Continental Group in Miami. Rob Schuler, president and organizing director of SEIU Local 11, says Continental is running an aggressive anti-union campaign trying to intimidate workers.
They've reacted by, you know, in typical fashion, by firing people, threatening people, intimidating, transferring them, you know, finding excuses to get rid of them.
Schuler says this Florida organizing drive is part of a national SEIU strategy to expand into southern and western states like Florida and Texas. He says these Florida condo workers need help dealing with very stressful jobs that often include hurricane evacuation plans and caring for senior citizen residents.
Everybody in these buildings is supervising these workers. They've got, you know, they're being watched on camera, they're being watched by condominium boards, they're being watched by contractors, you know, that employ them in the building, and then they've got every resident, you know, wanting them to do this or that, and if you know, they don't jump to it. They're under the gun. They need some changes.
A handful of taxpayers in Michigan are seeking a legal challenge to stop Ann Arbor Public Schools from providing same-sex benefits. The 17 taxpayers working with a religious law center are asking the Michigan Court of Appeals to apply a state constitutional amendment passed in November to a suit that failed in 2003. The original ruling was made before the current amendment was implemented, and the Washtenaw County Circuit Court said the plaintiffs had no right to sue. The taxpayers claim the amendment prevents employers from giving benefits to gay couples because it would be recognizing their union as a marriage. The city of Ann Arbor has filed a friend of the court brief in support of the school district.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. So just how cheap is Chinese labor? A Bureau of Labor Statistics consultant in China has concluded that factory wages in China averaged 64 cents an hour in 2002. In the U.S., it was $22.11. Average hourly wages for foreign factory workers rose 12% in 2003, but in the U.S., they rose just 4%. China has roughly 38 million factory workers in its cities. Another 71 million work in manufacturing outside cities. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Even from the convoluted depths of Lewis Carroll's fertile imagination, where down is up and wrong is right, the Alice in Wonderland author could not have conjured up a scene as bizarre as George W.'s $40 million inaugural extravaganza. Lavish balls, sumptuous gourmet meals, copious champagne brunches, indulgent corporate-sponsored receptions in posh private clubs, a cornucopia of excess for the privileged and connected, dancing in a swirl of political self-congratulation, and in anticipation of political rewards to come for those elites who picked up the $40 million tab. All this unseemly splurging while the loved ones of Americans who are neither privileged nor connected are mired in the deadly mayhem of George W.'s disastrous war in Iraq. One visual summed up the moral divide between those few so gaily dancing the war away in Washington and those many trapped so miserably in the brutal reality of Iraq. It was the recurring scene of stretch Hummer limousines ferrying the resplendent Gucci crowd from one gaudy gathering to the next, while soldiers driving real Humvees had been denied the protective armor that could save their lives. Indeed, $40 million could buy quite a bit of armor. In 1945, when our troops were in another raging war, Franklin Roosevelt rightly insisted on modesty and austerity for his inaugural, even noting in his formal address that it was appropriate, quote, that the form of this inauguration be simple and its words brief. But in the wonderland of Bush world, modesty is no virtue and hubris is to be celebrated. So party down, y'all! This is Jim Hightower saying, there were even special inaugural blowouts for the 20-somethings, including George's own war-age daughters who loudly proclaimed their support for Daddy's war, but not so much that they would join it. In Bush's world, the elites declare war. Other people do the fighting and dying.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website. Broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. Beaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, running now 24/7, 365 continuous streams of the program, as well as archives of the program, which you can also find at TomHartman.com. And if you want to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com, click live chat, already full of some of the finest minds on the entire internet, having fascinating discussions. I have come across, and it really in incremental ways, I've become aware of this over perhaps the past decade in little bits and pieces, the rise of religious power
in the Republican Party. And now beginning to infiltrate the Democratic Party as well, but particularly in the Republican Party. And at first, my sense of it was that there was just this, you know, people of faith were looking for a place to hang their hat. And communities of faith are very real things. When I was young, I participated in a number of different communities of faith of Christian churches by and large, from fundamentalist Pentecostal churches, the North Lansing Church of God, to the Methodist Church that I was raised in, to rather unorthodox churches, the Coptics and the you know, sitting Zazen at the Atlanta Zen Center for you. But in any case, in each place, what I found, regardless of their doctrine, regardless of their worldview, was that there was this extraordinary sense of community in the functional churches, in the churches or institutions or synagogues that, and I've spent some time in the, I have a couple of very close friends who are members of the Hasidic community, both here in the United States and in Israel, and I've spent a lot of time with them and without going into a lot of detail. There is this sense of community. I think this is one of the most basic of human needs. The sense of tribe, the sense of community, it comes out of the need for family. And particularly in a society where family is so badly fractured, it's more needed, you know, emotionally, psychologically, culturally than ever before. And in the midst of this, we are now finding people who are rising up, taking over these institutions, and doing so in ways that allow them to assert power and control, in ways that allow them to amass billions of dollars. Here we have Pat Robertson's worth of $1 billion, or sold to Christian Broadcasting Network for that. Jerry Falwell, very rich man. Many of these folks, very, very wealthy. Extraordinary power. And you know the stories about, you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely, and so on. And their doctrines, their theologies, are moving into the realm of politics because they have this post-millennialist worldview. And I want our guest to explain that to you. I came across her website. A friend of mine emailed me the link, said, you've got to see this video. You just have to see this video. And there's several of them actually on there. But this was an introduction to Dominionism. Dominionism is a Joan, I'm sure, will tell you better than I. In fact, let's just get her on here. Joan Beaucaire is the founder of Theocracy Watch. And Joan, am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes.
Oh, great, great. Glad to have you here. You, that presentation, after I watched it, I had to take it upstairs and say, Louise, you got to sit down. Whatever you're doing, you got to stop and watch this thing. This is mind-boggling. And your website is theocracywatch.org. Theocracy, of course, being the form of government where we are ruled by people, or where a nation or a group or whatever is ruled by people who claim that they are the sole arbiters of God's word, or that they have a direct line to the divine. Theocracywatch.org. You have this information. Tell us what Dominionism is, Joan.
It's the belief that Christians, and when I say Christians, I'm referring to what Dominionists say is the right-believing Christians. It's only a very narrow group of Christians. Have a biblical mandate, a commission, if you will, to take over and rule all of the secular institutions until Christ returns.
Now, this seems to me like a distortion of the great mandate in as I recall, in Matthew, in there someplace.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, where
the Dominionists are take that mandate very, very seriously.
Jesus said to his disciples, go out and spread the word among all men. But he was talking
about... Make disciples
about,
of all nations.
Yes, make
yeah.
disciples of all nations. And what he was saying, though, was spread his message of, you know, the... A rich man can more easily, you know, a camel can more easily get through the eye of a needle than a rich man can get into heaven. That you look at the log in your own eye before you look at the dust speck in another person's eye. That you forgive your enemies, you love your enemies, that, you know, Matthew 25, if you're going to get into heaven, the way you do it is by feeding the hungry, giving water to the thirsty, visiting those in prison, giving clothing to the naked, giving shelter to the homeless. How did this get turned into something quite different?
The fact that the flashier televangelists are so wealthy, this movement itself doesn't negate that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's often the same people who are on the front lines of fighting poverty through their churches. What they believe, and it's, if I could put it in one phrase, it's that God is the provider, not the state. They believe that the government has one main purpose, and that's to protect the population. And that
you mean
all
militarily.
The departments to be done away with, basically.
Yeah, and the government's sole purpose is to militarily protect the population from invasion by military force.
Yeah, that's really the purpose of the federal government. So, what they're trying to do is kind of remove the other functions of government through massive tax cuts, through massive program cuts, and then with the faith-based initiative and school vouchers, what they're doing is shifting the responsibility of government to the churches. So this has been going on since Bush became president. This huge process of transferring resources to the churches.
Well, the faith-based didn't the faith-based initiatives in another incarnation in a slightly different name and form really begin under Bill Clinton?
Yes, because of an act of Congress. But under the Democrats, there's really a big difference. The Democrats followed the Civil Rights Act. They said yes, government can give money to faith-based charities as long as they meet the guidelines of the federal government, which were very stringent. There was a lot of accountability. There was these strict laws about non-discrimination.
You can't force somebody to join your religion before you feed them.
No proselytizing was another part of that. And you know that the Senate tried to incorporate that. They passed a bill that said, you know, that was basically saying that recipients of government money couldn't proselytize, they couldn't discriminate. So what did Bush do is he just did an end run around Congress and just started giving billions of dollars to federal agencies.
Billions of dollars. And
well,
and this,
the faith-based czar, the one who's head of all this, Jim Towie, says $40 billion. But that doesn't count what has gone then to states, and then the states have dispersed. So it's,
holy cow.
Yeah.
And this is any – now, I'm assuming Reverend Moon is getting a good chunk of this as well?
Yes, he's very much involved, although I've been really looking more at the I haven't been following him as closely.
Yeah, as the Christian churches. Now, this you know, this is not – and I want to make it very clear to our listeners. I don't think you, Joan, or I – I define myself as a Christian. I can't speak for you, but I don't think that either one of us have any problem with religion being religion. In fact, I see it as generally a net good force in individuals' lives. Institutionalized religion has a pretty bloody history, but that's a whole other thing.
I also, you know, religion represents the best and worst of our history. And I don't have a problem with leaders leading from a deeply religious place. I mean, look at Martin Luther King. Look at Abraham Lincoln. Bill Clinton actually was very religious. People don't know that about him, but he was. He is.
And Jimmy Carter.
That's not the issue. The issue is when the federal government is being used to impose a certain religious belief on the rest of society. That's what's going on now.
Yeah, Joan, we only have about 3 minutes left. I'd like to just nail down some of the details of this. What is happening among the Dominionists? What evidence do you have that the Dominionists have actually seized control of our government?
All you have to do is go to their organizations like Christian Coalition, Family Research Council. Look at how they rate the people in Congress. It's phenomenal. I mean, go to my website and get that information, and you will be stunned.
Theocracywatch.org.
Yes, thank you. I mean, last year, 41 out of 51 senators got 100% rating from the Christian Coalition. The entire congressional leadership, except for maybe the fifth-ranking person in the House.
And the Dominion...
Every single other one, 100% rating from Christian Coalition.
Right, and the Dominionists now believe that the United States Constitution, which does not mention the word God, we have a godless, secular Constitution, and that's the way the founders wanted it. The United States Constitution should be replaced by the Bible, by the Ten Commandments, and this is one of the reasons why they're trying to get the Ten Commandments put in courthouses all around the country?
Yeah, that the Ten Commandments are the basis. They call it biblical law. Yeah, that the Ten Commandments are the basis of law, and certainly there's some commandments that should be.
Well, there's two of them, don't kill and don't steal, but
you look at the others and... don't blaspheme, and you shouldn't worship any other gods. I mean, so people worship other religions then would be in big trouble.
Right, and there's a long history of Protestants calling Catholics blasphemers because they worship statues, which is a violation, or they pray in front of statues, let's say, which Martin Luther saw as a violation of the First Commandment. I mean, this could be a civil religious war in the United States if these people actually...
I want to point out one thing since I don't have much time. In Bush's inaugural address, do you know how many times he used the word freedom and liberty?
42.
You know how many times he used the word democracy?
Once.
Yeah. Because freedom and liberty is not the same as democracy. And the way I found that out is I just started searching around for other interpretations of those words. And I went to the website of Dr. Tony Evans, who was Bush's...
Joan, let me interrupt you here. If you can stick around over our break, I'd like you to finish this thought on the other end, because you've got a really important message here, and I think we've just begun to scratch the surface. Do you have another 5-10 minutes here?
Sure.
Yeah, you can stick around with us. Great. Okay, we just have to take the breaks here. This is commercial radio, and it's a fine thing. It pays the bills. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page.
Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Your cheating heart will make you weep.
Yeah, speaking of cheating hearts, Secretary James Watt, our quote for the day, God gave us these things to use. After the last tree is felled, Christ will come back, the Interior Secretary, explaining why he felt that protecting the environment, for which Ronald Reagan had given him stewardship, over protecting the environment was unimportant. What do Bill Frist, Rick Santorum, Mitch McConnell, John Kyle, Denny Hastert, Roy Blount have in common? Dominionism. According to Joan Beaucaire, founder of TheocracyWatch.org, and Joan, let's get back into this just a little bit more. It's reading your material and watching your videos, I got this horrible feeling, and saying this as a person of faith myself, I get this horrible feeling that people who were corrupting religion were using this bizarre, corrupted, almost cult-like religion to take over the government of the United States. Is that too far out?
Let me tell you something that comes from a training manual of a Dominionist organization, the Free Congress Foundation. They claim they promote a strategy of building a parallel culture, keeping out of the dominant culture, keeping their kids out of school. They go to either Christian schools or Christian homeschool.
Like Rick Santorum homeschooled his kids.
Oh, it's huge. Building a very powerful parallel culture, you know, through the media, through music, through books. There's just a whole universe out there. And then simultaneously destroying the status quo. What they claim they don't want to do is work within the institutions and try and change them. They want to destroy them and then be able to move in. And one way to do that is through building up a massive deficit, massive tax cuts. And then what is the crowning jewel of the status quo? What's the crowning jewel of our government, the Social Security?
The New Deal.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So
Hello?
So this is sort of, you have the polygamous Mormons, for example, who are also pursuing an unorthodox religious path. But they basically just say that they want to be left alone. They're not trying to take over the state of Utah. And then the United States. Here we've got a group of people who subscribe to a theology which suggests that the fulfillment of their life's work will be the end of the world. Am I exaggerating?
For some, you know, one thing I should say is this isn't a monolithic block, but there's certainly a large number who feel that we're in our end times and that Christ is about to return, and to do that, we need to have some kind of major confrontation, probably nuclear.
Like a nuclear war. And in Revelation, yeah. I've read Revelation several times, the 144,000 people survived. I mean, it's not a big bunch.
To put your so much belief and political activity on revelation, you know, to give that so much weight, is a little funny when you look at the entirety of the Bible, put so much on that one piece.
Yeah. So what drives people to this kind of extremism that would cause them to destroy a democratic republic, the institutions of a democratic republic? And we have about a half a minute left, Joan. I'm sorry.
Tom, you said it earlier on. I think people are hungry for community. And if you go to a lot of the mega churches, the really big ones, you really get a strong sense of belonging. And also church services are quite cathartic. There's a kind of therapy that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they're very, and they have a really very sophisticated counterculture that's thrown out of this.
I can testify. I was part of it for years. I mean, I can, yeah. You know, see. Yeah, absolutely.
I actually enjoy going to their services until they start talking. But the music, the dancing, there's a kind of transcendent quality sometimes in the Pentecostal and charismatic churches.
Oh, it's extraordinary. It's very seductive and very useful, very helpful for many people until they get into politics. Is the dangerous thing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joan.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At midnight on Sunday, nearly 800 auto workers went on strike in Shelbyville, Kentucky. Represented by the United Auto Workers Local 2383, the workers set up a picket line outside of Thyssen Krupp Bud, an automotive parts supplier that provides parts to two Ford Motor Company assembly plants nearby. The union and company have had more than 20 meetings, but have been unable to reach an agreement on wages and benefits. Officials with the UAW say the strike could go on for some time.
The SEIU is in the midst of a major organizing campaign to represent thousands of condominium workers employed by Continental Group in Miami. Rob Schuler, president and organizing director of SEIU Local 11, says Continental is running an aggressive anti-union campaign trying to intimidate workers.
They've reacted by, you know, in typical fashion, by firing people, threatening people, intimidating, transferring them, you know, finding excuses to get rid of them.
Schuler says this Florida organizing drive is part of a national SEIU strategy to expand into southern and western states like Florida and Texas. He says these Florida condo workers need help dealing with very stressful jobs that often include hurricane evacuation plans and caring for senior citizen residents.
Everybody in these buildings is supervising these workers. They've got, you know, they're being watched on camera, they're being watched by condominium boards, they're being watched by contractors, you know, that employ them in the building, and then they've got every resident, you know, wanting them to do this or that, and if, you know, they don't jump to it, they're under the gun. They need some changes.
A handful of taxpayers in Michigan are seeking a legal challenge to stop Ann Arbor Public Schools from providing same-sex benefits. The 17 taxpayers working with a religious law center are asking the Michigan Court of Appeals to apply a state constitutional amendment passed in November to a suit that failed in 2003. The original ruling was made before the current amendment was implemented, and the Washtenaw County Circuit Court said the plaintiffs had no right to sue. The taxpayers claim the amendment prevents employers from giving benefits to gay couples because it would be recognizing their union as a marriage. The city of Ann Arbor has filed a friend of the court brief in support of the school district.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. So just how cheap is Chinese labor? A Bureau of Labor Statistics consultant in China has concluded that factory wages in China averaged 64 cents an hour in 2002. In the U.S., it was $22.11. Average hourly wages for foreign factory workers rose 12% in 2003, but in the U.S., they rose just 4%. China has roughly 38 million factory workers in its cities, another 71 million work in manufacturing outside cities. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Take a straight and stronger course to the corner of your life. Make the white queen run so fast, she hasn't got time to...
Viagra for your brain. Tom Hartman here with you. It's 27 minutes before the hour. Today's Wall Street Journal had an interesting editorial. The editorial was basically hooray. I think the title of it was Hooray for Deficits. Again, they're the believers in the Star of the Beast theory. If you drive government into bankruptcy, then you can kill it off. And the problem, of course, is, and this gets back to the whole strategy here. If you kill off government, and then you kill off its ability to protect we the people who own and control government, at least in theory, and largely in practice, you know, through our electoral process, at least until we got electronic voting machines that were owned by Republican corporations, another discussion. But they've got a graph on this thing that's almost worth the price of the Wall Street Journal just to clip this graph out and tape it to your wall about government spending and government resources. And starting with Reagan in 1980, you saw as a percentage of GDP, government spending went up to 24%, nearly 24%, whereas resources dropped from 19% down to about 17%. And then through the 90s, through the Clinton era, you see resources steadily increasing and government spending dramatically dropping. And then Bush came into office and suddenly it reversed again. And you wonder why the economy, why the middle class is being destroyed. So it's not some secret. Pardon the digression. The Dominionist thing, though, Harriet in our chat room made the point, this is the same thing with gangs, that the gangs are seeking community. And I've been saying this for years. We have lost our rites of passage. I mean, there's these little remnants of it in our religion, the bar and bat mitzvah in Judaism, the confirmation in Catholicism. But they're really not the rites of passage that we used to have, that traditional societies still have. And so we've got a lot of lost teenagers. Who am I? Am I an adult yet? Am I not? You know, what's it all about? What's my mission? What should I do? And the whole idea of having a goal in life is something people don't even talk about anymore, at least in this culture. I can tell you my goal in life, to bring fire, to bring change, to bring positive, healthy change to the world. It's been the goal of my whole entire life. And I'm sure if you look inside yourself, you have one too. And it may be even more noble than mine. It might be something like being the very best parent to your children, or the very, very best companion to your spouse, or the very best friend to your friends. Agent of goodness in the world. But there is this rising institutional coalition, the Dominionists. Just plug Dominionist into Google as a beginning point. But I'd suggest you start out with Joan Beaucaire's website, Theocracy Watch. And I say this as an advocate of religion, as an advocate of spirituality, that this is a perversion and distortion of religion and a discarding to a large extent of spirituality, and it has become, frankly, dangerous to America. It concerns me greatly. It concerns me greatly. Welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. I've missed a few time cues. I had 3 hours sleep last night. Flying back from California, took the red eye,
got here a half hour before we went on the air. It's going to be a wild day. Let's go to the phone lines. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Well, good day, Tom. You're back in the People's Republic of Vermont, I see.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
And congratulations to all you folks in New England on your great football team.
Yeah, I heard that there was something about that. I was actually giving a speech during. I did a 4-hour workshop during the Super Bowl game. So
I rooted for them because I remember all the lean years they used to have.
Yeah.
But anyway, the previous guest you had there, that was quite an interesting topic, and I do believe I heard you say that this Dominionism was a form of post-millennialism, and I agree, and I think just for maybe the folks that don't understand, there's the millennium, as the guest said. There's one verse in Revelation, I believe it's Revelation 20:10. It doesn't say a millennium. It mentions something about 1,000 years.
Right, which and is a millennium. Yeah.
Right, it is. And somehow or other, there have become three schools of thought on what the millennium means. Now, in Western Michigan here, we have a lot of Calvinists who are amillennial, and the Catholic Church, to some extent, amillennial. All that simply means is they don't take that literally. Now, the two schools, there's actually three schools. There's the postmillennial, which is what the guest was talking about, which is the idea that if you just have enough good Christian people, and it's usually Christian, that take over the government or anything else, we will make this world such a great place. It's basically like you're cleaning the house up for the guest, and the guest is Jesus. And when he comes back, everything will be fine. It's like, you know, why did he have to come back?
Right.
Well, whereas the premillennialists believe that Jesus will have to come back and straighten it out, which is what I believe. And then, of course, there's a little variation on that called dispensational premillennialism, which is that you really don't have to do anything at all because there's going to be a rapture, and he's going to take all the good people away, and the bad ones will be left. And all this is based on one little verse in Revelation, and it's just amazing, you know. And, of course, the postmillennial is probably the worst of all because what it does is it seems to say that if only Christians could run the world, run the government. Well, as Christians, you know, you and I, we realize, Tom, I mean, the nicest of us are still sinners, and you're not going to have people making the world a better place so when Jesus comes back, everything is hunky-dory. That ain't the way it works, you know. I mean, this is just a complete distortion.
Well, it is in some people's minds, but this goes even beyond that, because what I'm seeing in the Dominionist movement is a coalition of those many different perspectives that you talked about.
Really?
Combined together to there, it's really, you could just boil it down to theocracy.
Exactly.
To the idea that democracy is secular and therefore profane somehow, and that it should be replaced with theocracy. And ironically, this is the exact same position that Ayatollah Sistani is taking in Iran,
right,
that Osama bin Laden has taken among the Wahhabists and the Sunnis, and that the Catholic Church, the role the Catholic Church played during the Inquisitions.
Yeah, it's just ironic because our greatest enemy now are these religious fanatics who hold that same worldview. And I mentioned this even at a Bible study that I went to. I said, you know, and this sounds heretical, but it actually makes sense when you think about it. I said, you know, during the Cold War, it's a darn good thing that our enemies were atheists, because they didn't want to start a nuclear war, because if you're an atheist and you blow the world up, that's it. But
yeah,
what do you do when you're dealing with religious fanatics, whether it's on our side or their side, where they think, oh, it's no big deal to die. We'll just go to heaven and we'll get a greater glory. The problem is both sides think God is on their side.
Yeah.
What are you going to do then? Then you've got real problems.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Rick, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thanks for raising it and for your lucid explanation of the various slicing and dicing of millennialism. Kate in Arcata, California on the line. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to point out a thought that occurred to me is that I think that Bush is such a popular leader amongst a certain group of people, partly because he himself found belonging and meaning in a church group.
Sure. As many of us have. As many people have.
Exactly. And the particular one he found, you know, he was saved into or whatever, has become a really powerful one to a lot, you know, with a lot of people subscribing to it from all different threads, you know, all different parts of the civic culture. So the fact that he experienced belonging, which clearly he didn't have throughout his life, or he wouldn't have ended up where he was, you know, in alcoholism, et cetera, makes him a real tough character to deal with because he has charisma and you know, understanding of how it is to be lost, et cetera.
Yeah, let me read you a bit of a speech. This from one of the more famous millennialists. Peter Pearl, An Absolute Truth. This was quoted in the Washington Post magazine, May 13th, 2001. He says, our entire system is built on the Judeo-Christian ethic, but it fell apart when we started denying God. If you stand up today and acknowledge God, they will try to destroy you. First of all, so it starts out with paranoia. Mm-hmm. His main mission, and then we talk about Tom DeLay. Tom DeLay says, his main mission is to bring us back to the Constitution and to absolute truth that has been manipulated and destroyed by a liberal worldview. When faced with the truth hurts. It is human nature not to face that. People hate the messenger. That's why they killed Christ. Will this country accept the worldviews of humanism, materialism, sexism, naturalism, postmodernism, or any other isms? Or will we march forward with a biblical worldview, a worldview that says God is our creator, that man is a sinner, and that we will save this country? Now, up to that point, there's a lot of people who agree, and that we will save this country by changing the hearts and minds of Americans. We have the House and Senate. All we need is the presidency.
Well, there you go. You know, that belief that you're saving somebody is also a belief that you're helping them and that you owe it to them. You're self-sacrificing to save someone else. So that's another piece of it. It's some real evil disguised as good in the hearts of people.
Yeah, and here's another interesting thing is that the whole rapture cult didn't come about until the 19th century. It was based on an Anglo-Irish theologian by the name of John Darby in the early 19th century, who came up with it as a way of explaining the perceived contradiction in the Old Testament prophetic book of Daniel, and comparing that with Paul's epistle to the Thessalonians and Revelation. And in Thessalonians 4:13, he says that we're going to meet the Lord in the air. And how does this correspond with Daniel? And this is a very recent thing. This is less than 150 years old. The whole idea, the Catholic Church for the vast majority of its time, and the various Protestant churches did not subscribe to this theory. This is a very, very new thing. And I back when I lived in Atlanta, and I ran an ad agency down there. One of our largest clients was Holiday Inns. Days Inn. We also did work for Holiday Inn. And Days Inn sponsored a dinner where Ronald Reagan came to speak. And he made the comment that we may be living in the last days. And there's a number of comments from, in fact, I quoted several of his comments in my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And maybe we are, but not in a way that gives, in my opinion, the government an obligation to try and bring about that battle on the plain of Armageddon in order to bring down Jesus. I mean, there's these movements, not only in Christianity, by the way, in Judaism, there's a fairly large community in Jerusalem where they drive around with bumper stickers that in Hebrew say Mashiach now, bring down the Messiah now. And Alan Goodman, I was in Jerusalem the week that Alan Goodman went up on the Dome of the Rock and tried to pull a tent out of his backpack and set it up to set up a new temple, mm-hmm. because the temple has to return to fulfill the prophecy, and then took a machine gun and just mowed down a bunch of Arabs around
right.
him. And they hustled him off. And then, of course, Ariel Sharon got this whole thing started all over again, two, 3 years ago when he went up on the Temple Mount and stirred everything up. But that's a whole nother rant. But this Dominionist thing concerns me. I got to move along. Kate, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi, Tom. A couple of really quick things. I wanted to see if you were aware of this, but the U.S. Customs Department is now confiscating prescription drugs that are being shipped in from offshore.
No,
have you heard about
this? I didn't. You mean via the mail or via FedEx or via people driving through in their cars or what?
Yeah, mail, FedEx kind of thing.
Well, that's interesting.
I know this for a fact. It actually happened to me. I ordered from one of these half-price online companies and never received it, and got a letter from the U.S. Customs Department. So I just wanted to let you know that.
So they're starting to play hardball now to protect the interests of the pharmaceutical companies here in the United States.
It looks that way.
Remarkable.
What I really wanted to call about, I wanted to comment on a call that you got last week on the Brunch with Bernie segment.
Mm-hmm.
You had a caller that said that you were being disingenuous because no one was being forced to participate in private investments.
Okay.
I
don't remember the details, but finish your thought.
The idea was, and of course, you commented that none of the details of Bush's plan had been released, but the point that he was making was,
for Social
well, you
Security.
Don't, no one's pointing a gun at your head and telling you have to invest in private investments. I have a point of contention with the logic of his argument, and I just wanted to bring that up, which was basically if we make changes to the Social Security system that begin to siphon off a large amount of money going into Social Security, if we start losing 20, 30, 50% of the investment going into Social Security, this will guarantee the failure of the Social Security system.
Oh, not just the Social Security system. This is what brought down Argentina. There was a whole article today in the Wall Street Journal about how Argentina is trying to restructure its debt again. And the thing that brought down the entire economic system in Argentina was that they privatized their Social Security system. And they had to borrow billions of dollars, the equivalent of trillions if you scale them up to our size. They had to do the same kind of borrowing George W. is doing. And it busted the bank.
Exactly. But the point is that if they do make these changes, to say that we aren't forced to participate in it is not a very good argument, because if you would no longer invest in a system that you knew then was going to go bust.
Right,
so
and that's been, yeah, I agree, Jeff, and that's been my comment all along. I have no problem with a government-mandated retirement program, if we have that debate and if we decide as a country that that's what we want to have. But that's not what Social Security is. Social Security is an insurance program. And it's like comparing apples and oranges, to use a tired metaphor. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Open spaces are dangerous places for some amphibians, and they might need to be protected in captivity. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A major report on amphibians says hundreds of species around the world are headed toward extinction, and disease is a big part of the problem. To save amphibians, people might need to take unprecedented action to control disease in the wild and to breed amphibians in captivity. Simon Stewart is a biologist with the World Conservation Union, and he directed the Global Amphibian Assessment. Stewart says amphibians are under severe stress from climate change, chemical contamination, and loss of habitat. He says the stress appears to make them more vulnerable to a widespread and deadly disease that's caused by a fungus. Stewart says more research is needed on amphibians, but research is not enough. He says we need to create sanctuaries for these creatures, and we need to keep them free of the fungal disease. For some species, captive breeding might be the only way to save them from extinction.
Until we get a grip of managing this disease in the wild, we really run the risk of losing hundreds of species. It's for that reason that we're advocating both doing the research on the species and bringing quite a few of the species that we really might lose or are really close to the edge into captivity so that we buy time, so we can learn about these species, we can look after them and rebuild their populations a bit in captivity so that reintroductions can be done once we have some controlled areas in the wild which can be maintained disease-free.
Stewart says a major commitment to breeding in captivity and habitat protection in the wild would go a long way to protecting amphibians and bringing them back from the brink of extinction. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Come all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on, boys?
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
And welcome back. I'm on the side of democracy. I'm on the side absolutely of democracy, of the right of individuals to practice their religion, whatever it may be, however they want to do it, without the interference of government, and for the right of government and the ability of government to function and provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and et cetera, you know, from the preamble of the Constitution, without the interference of any external institutions, be they churches, corporations, or any other special interest groups, frankly. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We just had Jeff in Boulder. This is Jeff in Denver. Hey, a different Jeff. Hey, Jeff, what's up? Hey, Jeff.
So this thing about revelations and the thing about people wanting to bring on the end times seems to me in many cases more of a selfish thing of people just avoiding responsibility. And John Kenneth Galbraith said it quite well in one quote. It says, "The modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness."
Well, I have to tell you, back in the 70s when Hal Lindsey wrote his book, The Late Great Planet Earth, which was one of the books that really kicked this thing off, I read that book. And I got real into it. I was fascinated by it. I must have read a half a dozen books on biblical prophecy and all this stuff.
And you know, there are, the, as I recall, 54 specific prophecies in Isaiah and in Daniel and in the New Testament that have to be fulfilled before Jesus comes back to the earth. And I was, you know, keeping track of them and making lists and noticing this stuff. And I think that there are I think that it comes out of the very natural desire of human beings to make sense out of chaos. You know?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think there are people, all different motivations, but that, I think, believe that is one of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it may well be. May well be. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Always good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, helping you win the water cooler wars. The Rational Discussion. The No Boring Zone. And talk radio for the rest of us. All here in one place. Even after only 3 hours of sleep in the last 24 hours.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At midnight on Sunday, nearly 800 auto workers went on strike in Shelbyville, Kentucky. Represented by the United Auto Workers Local 2383, the workers set up a picket line outside of Thyssen Krupp Bud, an automotive parts supplier that provides parts to two Ford Motor Company assembly plants nearby. The union and company have had more than 20 meetings, but have been unable to reach an agreement on wages and benefits. Officials with the UAW say the strike could go on for some time.
The SEIU is in the midst of a major organizing campaign to represent thousands of condominium workers employed by Continental Group in Miami. Rob Schuler, president and organizing director of SEIU Local 11, says Continental is running an aggressive anti-union campaign trying to intimidate workers.
They've reacted by, you know, in typical fashion, by firing people, threatening people, intimidating, transferring them, you know, finding excuses to get rid of them.
Schuler says this Florida organizing drive is part of a national SEIU strategy to expand into southern and western states like Florida and Texas. He says these Florida condo workers need help dealing with very stressful jobs that often include hurricane evacuation plans and caring for senior citizen residents.
Everybody in these buildings is supervising these workers. They've got, you know, they're being watched on camera, they're being watched by condominium boards, they're being watched by contractors, you know, that employ them in the building, and then they've got every resident, you know, wanting them to do this or that, and if, you know, they don't jump to it, you know, they're under the gun. They need some changes.
A handful of taxpayers in Michigan are seeking a legal challenge to stop Ann Arbor Public Schools from providing same-sex benefits. The 17 taxpayers working with a religious law center are asking the Michigan Court of Appeals to apply a state constitutional amendment passed in November to a suit that failed in 2003. The original ruling was made before the current amendment was implemented, and the Washtenaw County Circuit Court said the plaintiffs had no right to sue. The taxpayers claim the amendment prevents employers from giving benefits to gay couples because it would be recognizing their union as a marriage. The city of Ann Arbor has filed a friend of the court brief in support of the school district.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. So just how cheap is Chinese labor? A Bureau of Labor Statistics consultant in China has concluded that factory wages in China averaged 64 cents an hour in 2002. In the U.S., it was $22.11. Average hourly wages for foreign factory workers rose 12% in 2003, but in the U.S., they rose just 4%. China has roughly 38 million factory workers in its cities. Another 71 million work in manufacturing outside cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Oh, cruel fate! Have pity on the poor CEOs of corporate world. One day they're strutting peacocks. The next day, they're feather dusters. Several CEOs who've recently had their plumage plucked are in the news again, this time facing trial for various levels of fraud. Kenneth Lay of Enron, Dennis Kozlowski of Tyco, Bernie Ebbers of WorldCom, Richard Scrushy of HealthSouth, and Walter Forbes of CUC International are among the former CEOs who once were heralded in business magazines, management books, and the popular media as giants, geniuses, and gurus, the gods of corporate success. Only a couple of years ago, these gentlemen of the executive suite were giving lectures on how to run a modern corporation. Now, they're in the dock. Not only have these gods tumbled from the heights, but their legal defense is that they were never really in charge of their corporations and knew nothing about the multi-billion dollar heist taking place on their watch. It's the dummy defense. Lay, for example, now says that, golly, while he once took credit for Enron's success, he really can't be responsible for its collapse since he wasn't involved in the details of corporate management. Likewise, Walter Forbes says he was uninvolved in CUC's day-to-day operations because, as CEO, he had his head in the clouds, focusing on, quote, the strategy vision part. The same with Ebbers. WorldCom's hotshot chief asserts that he knew nothing about the $11 billion insider fraud that devoured his company, for he left all the arithmetic to his financial people. Even though he has previously claimed credit for being a hands-on financial detail man who made WorldCom a success. This is Jim Hightower saying, odd that these guys who raked in the big bucks for being in charge now claim to have been management dummies and victims of conniving underlings. Odder yet, not one of them offers to give back the loot they took.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his medications. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Rocked by scandals and shoddy results. All right, it's John Kennedy of the Tallahassee Bureau and this Florida Sun Sentinel. Rocked by scandals and shoddy results, Governor Jeb Bush's drive to turn over many state services and millions of taxpayer dollars to private corporations appears to be slowed by the state's newly minted Republican leaders. Hey, they're getting it. They're getting it. If we are going to take money from people by force, as the libertarians like to say, at the barrel of a gun, you don't pay your taxes, that's what happens. If we're going to take money from people by force, we better use it carefully, we better use it wisely, and it's nuts that we be giving it to for-profit corporations who are then going to use it to enhance profits. Unless you can really, clearly, tightly, neatly, consistently prove that they can provide that service less expensively, more reliably, and with greater accountability than a government agency. And I have yet to see that. Instead, what we see is cost overruns, fraud, over and over and over and over, and they just get their hands slapped repeatedly. I want people who work for me using my money. But down in Florida, they've been this privatization drive. House Speaker Alan Bentz of Panama City and Senate President Tom Lee of Bradenton say they will put the brakes on privatization efforts this year. A sudden shift away from what has been a cornerstone of Florida government since Bush took office 6 years ago. That 6 years ago, by the way, was back when he cut the deal with Enron to privatize the Everglades. Enron was going to take over the Everglades, remember? They're trying to privatize Florida's $14 billion Medicaid program. Oh, Bill Frist has got to be salivating at that. Think of all the money his family can make. Governor Bush, in his second inaugural address, spoke of emptying Tallahassee's downtown buildings of workers, turning the structures into, quote, silent monuments to the time when government played a larger role than it deserved or could adequately fill. Instead, he's going to have that same role played and filled with corporate cronies who are going to make enough profit off this that they can buy big mansions and play golf with Jeb at the golf course. He's eliminated 10,000 government positions since taking office through privatization. For example, the state's 9-year, $350 million contract with Converges Corporation for performing payroll benefits and other personnel functions, it's now running 2 years behind schedule. Sorry, you've got a bunch of bureaucrats who are making, you know, middle class salaries, and that's it. And they got benefits and a pension, but it's basically a middle class salary, and they're working for the government, and they know that if they steal a little bit of money, it's a major crime, and people are looking over their shoulders, and there's systems of accountability. They're going to do things with some relative efficiency. People say, well, I don't want the DMV run by a private corporation. Oh, yeah? Have you tried to get your health insurance bill paid recently? The DMV looks like a paradise to me. Actually, here in Vermont, you go to the DMV, you take a number, you sit down, they call you. Newspapers to read, the TV's on, you can watch it. It took me to get my driver's license renewed 2 years ago. It took me about 25 minutes. They've got their act together. Why they're responding to we the people. Now, government doesn't always do everything well, and I'm not an advocate of huge government. That's not my point. My point is that this whole theology, this religious, this belief system, that if you simply take government functions of protecting the commons, we're looking out for we the people, taking our interests and taking our money at the barrel of a gun and hand it over to private corporations so that they can make a profit on it while they're performing the exact same services, just doesn't make any sense. Medicare is administered with a 1% overhead. Private health insurance in the United States is administered with anywhere from 13 to 26% overhead, depending on the company and the part of the country. Why? They've got to pay the dividends to their stockholders. They've got to pay million-dollar salaries to their CEOs. They got to have gold-plated faucets in the corporate jets. They've got to have the fancy headquarters. They got to pay for the marketing and advertising. None of those expenses exist when the government administers these programs.
but I digress. We still have a few folks on hold from the last hour. I want to get to them. I don't want to be too disrespectful here. I do appreciate people hanging on. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan on the line. Hey, Raymond, what's on your mind?
Well, Tom, I just wanted to get back to you with a comment on the last hour's discussion on the Dominionists. And, of course, there's a lot of things you could go down, but I think one thing we haven't talked about a lot is in terms of actionable things that we can do is as with fundamentalism, they really all do not have the identical kinds of philosophies.
This is a coalition. This isn't a monolithic movement.
And my point is we need to remember that. Don't keep thinking they is one whole, and we need to start driving the wedges by hitting issues that will differentiate one part of the group from the other, because that's the best way to break up a fundamentalist cult and thing like that is because it will fall apart from within, because everybody has really some little nuance of an idea, and their real weaknesses is they can't give up and compromise.
Well, if you look at the last time the Dominionists took over, when they took over the state of Massachusetts in the 1600s, and they were you know, the burning witches up until 1689, they did implode. I mean, they simply died under their own weight. And that happens. I'm not sure that the approach to take is a negative kind of warfare approach. Let's go after them the way, for example, the Republicans have gone after the Democrats. I think over the short term you get results. Over the long term you do so much damage both to yourself and to the system that it's not worth it. I think the thing to do is for Democrats, progressives, liberals, and that vast radical middle in America to start standing up and saying, you know, no, there are, we certainly don't want the Soviet Union here. Thank you very much. We do not want a one-party state. We do not want the government involved in the production of goods and services. We do not want the government involved in the transportation and delivery of things. We don't want five-year plans. We don't want all that nonsense. But there are some things that we really actually want the government to do. We want the government to make sure our water is clean, our air is clean, our food is pure, our drugs are safe. And we don't want it done in a way that accrues to the benefit of private corporations who are slipping money under the table to the politicians who are making the rules.
Well, I don't suggest that we should just have that one aspect. I think you're right. We need to point to a better direction. We need to try to make sure we get that out there. But as part of the tactics going forward is to keep coming back where we have the opportunities.
Yeah. Well,
remind these people of their differences.
Yeah. Well, and the place where I missed that, where I you know, is my brain is a little foggy after only 3 hours of sleep last night on an airplane, no less. Every muscle in my body is aching. But the point that I should have added to that is that these caring for the poor among us, making sure that people have bootstraps to pull themselves up by. And I'm not an advocate of simply putting people on the dole and giving them money forever. I think the best welfare program is a job, frankly, and a good education and free education. But giving people bootstraps, that those are the real moral values that government should be involved with. And, you know, just straight up, if a church does not want to marry gays, to take one of the inflammatory ones that the right wing has dragged out and dusted off, if a church doesn't want to marry gays, I respect that. I say God bless them. They don't have to marry gays. But if a gay couple wants to have the legal protections so that they can visit each other in the hospital, they can pass along their inheritance and things, and if there's a church that wants to call that a marriage, or if there's a state that wants to call that a civil union, why should that interest us?
Well, Tom, I think you got a opportunity for an example there, is that there are in that coalition some who think that's more important than others. And if you have some in that coalition who are more friendly to a homosexual community, you ought to praise them for being accepting of.
Yeah, as we do Dick Cheney.
And that will help contribute to driving to break up their coalition.
Yeah.
And
I think not ultimately, Raymond, though. I think not. I think because that, you know, John Kerry tried that and John Edwards tried that with Dick Cheney, pointing out over and over and over again that his daughter Mary was gay. And all it did was backfire on them. I think that the people have this my team is right no matter what mentality, and they're willing to overlook the foibles of their own team. And this is true of you and me just as much as it is of them. And simply pointing out the weaknesses and foibles of their side, ultimately, I think that what we have to offer is a positive vision as an alternative. I really do. I think that's the way we have to go. Raymond, I got to move along. I respect your point of view, and I think that there's some truth to it, and it's certainly the strategy that Newt Gingrich has been using with great success. But I think over time, my personal opinion, I think over time the side effects will be more negative than the outcome. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
get a good
wrong.
Night's sleep tonight, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Raymond. I'll do my best. John in Shreveport, Louisiana on the line. Hey, John, what's up? Thanks
Hi,
for waiting
Tom,
so long.
It's me again. Fundamentalist Baptist over my damn dead body. Greetings from you here.
Okay.
Got a quick question for you. Just want your opinion on something. If you were president, how would you deal with the situation concerning Iran right now with their nuclear program?
Well, according to Mohammed al-Baradei and the international community, Iran is not developing a nuclear weapon. Iran has opened all of their facilities to the United Nations for inspections.
And you believe that?
There's a couple of hundred inspectors in there right now looking around.
Kind of like North Korea?
So I'm assuming that you're – no, I think we have a real problem with North Korea. So I'm assuming that you're listening to Dick Cheney and not to the rest of the world,
probably did with Iraq.
Actually,
if you want to know my source of information – I read Soldier Fortune magazine, which happens to come out 6 months with actually relative and accurate information 6 months before you usually hear it in the normal media. So my question is this: if we trust if the Clinton administration trusted North Korea not to develop nuclear weapons,
they didn't trust them. They put cameras in there and they monitor those cameras 24 hours a day. It was the Bush administration that let them take the cameras down.
Oh please. That was
you know that. This is a matter of fact.
Don't insult my intelligence, please.
This is a matter of fact, John. Go read the newspapers. Just go read. I'm sorry, John. We're out of time, but this is a matter of fact. The Clinton administration negotiated those things. Well, the UN, by and large, it was the IAEA negotiated those things where they put those cameras in. And yes, I no doubt in my mind, the Koreans were violating those rules, but not the big way that they are now. They're going full tilt boogie. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got a
get anywhere. I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242-8272. Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
It's indeed 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. John in Shreveport, Louisiana. Give me a call back. I'd love to hear. I'm sorry we ran up against the break here. And, you know, we can argue about Iran and North Korea all you want. That's prospective stuff. I'm interested in the retrospective stuff. I'd love to know, since you're a regular reader of Soldier of Fortune magazine, which I haven't read in a number of years, I'd love to know what their take was on Iraq. And also what your and their thoughts are on Pakistan and India having nuclear weapons, particularly Pakistan, which is not a democracy. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service is with us. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. A couple interesting things. Karl Rove has now been made Deputy Chief of Staff. They are saying at the White House that he deserves this, and he will have a portfolio that is larger than just political.
Interesting. Larger than just political, meaning he's going to run the White House like he always did.
That's right. But now he'll be able to speak more because he'll be a deputy chief of staff.
Yeah, yeah. Who's the?
They sort of kept him in the closet, except to the faithful, in terms of, you know, his strategy now, because
yeah,
he's a deputy chief of staff. They're going to give him more of a spokesperson role.
Well, I think that might have been his choice, too. He seemed like kind of a shy guy there for a while, but now he's really basking in the glory.
Yeah, I think he's definitely into it. Also, the White House says that actually, the White House didn't say this. This was done by a separate sort of a mole. Apparently, right after the State of the Union address, they reached out to their talk show constituency and did 70 interviews on the State of the Union speech in the 24 to 48 hours afterwards.
Wow, that's one very efficient PR machine. They didn't call us.
They didn't call me either. Steny Hoyer, as you know, he's the minority whip. He said today that Republicans were playing dirty. He talked about how they have now started to go after Harry Reid in Nevada.
Did you read Harry Reid's comments about that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it was remarkable. Harry Reid, I just got this yesterday. He said, the president called me last month and said, I want to work together with you. Let's bury the hatchet. And I said, great, let's do that. And now I discover, this is Reed speaking, now I discover that the RNC is preparing to release a 30 or 50 page summary of all the dirt on Harry Reid and that they're going to do to me what they did to Tom Daschle. And he says, Mr. President, if you're a man of your word, you will tell your party, which you control, to not mail that thing out to a million people this week.
Very interesting. I did not see that. But
yeah.
Hoyer went really after them. He said the firing of Joel Heffley from the Ethics Committee. Now, Joel has been on my and Doug's radio show every week for 12 years, so I know him very, very well. They talked about, Hoyer said that the budget was a fraud. It was a failure of leadership, that the president was hiding the cost of the deficit.
Wait a second. Who's the they who said this?
What?
Who's the they who said this?
Steny Hoyer.
Ah, okay, the congressman.
Well, yeah, he's the deputy minority whip of
right.
the Dems.
Right.
And he also said that there was too much control in terms of foreign investments in our economy.
Well, I'll agree with that.
So will I. Very interesting. Also, you've probably heard this. This was sort of announced before that Michael Gerson, who is the president's speechwriter, has and the guy who's responsible for putting in much of the religious parts of his various speeches, has now been elevated to assistant to the president for policy and planning.
Wow. He's one of the Dominionists. He's part of the LaHaye group. He's one of the
let's
bring about the Armageddon. Let's have the battle there in the Middle East. Let's have the nuclear war and all the good people will go into the sky.
Exactly. These people are unbelievable. Also, Secretary Snow has been on the Hill today as part of the post-budget day. He was testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee. He said, well, the tax cuts do increase the deficit in the short term, but in the long term, they increase growth. And that they were.
Ellen, we're out of time, but I get the gist of it. Thanks so much for
the
report. I appreciate it.
Party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At midnight on Sunday, nearly 800 auto workers went on strike in Shelbyville, Kentucky. Represented by the United Auto Workers Local 2383, the workers set up a picket line outside of Thyssen Krupp Bud, an automotive parts supplier that provides parts to two Ford Motor Company assembly plants nearby. The union and company have had more than 20 meetings, but have been unable to reach an agreement on wages and benefits. Officials with the UAW say the strike could go on for some time.
The SEIU is in the midst of a major organizing campaign to represent thousands of condominium workers employed by Continental Group in Miami. Rob Schuler, president and organizing director of SEIU Local 11, says Continental is running an aggressive anti-union campaign trying to intimidate workers.
They've reacted by, in typical fashion, by firing people, threatening people, intimidating, transferring them, finding excuses to get rid of them.
Schuler says this Florida organizing drive is part of a national SEIU strategy to expand into southern and western states like Florida and Texas. He says these Florida condo workers need help dealing with very stressful jobs that often include hurricane evacuation plans and caring for senior citizen residents.
Everybody in these buildings is supervising these workers. They've got, they're being watched on camera, they're being watched by condominium boards, they're being watched by contractors, that employ them in the building, and then they've got every resident, wanting them to do this or that, and if, they don't jump to it, they're under the gun. They need some changes.
A handful of taxpayers in Michigan are seeking a legal challenge to stop Ann Arbor Public Schools from providing same-sex benefits. The 17 taxpayers working with a religious law center are asking the Michigan Court of Appeals to apply a state constitutional amendment passed in November to a suit that failed in 2003. The original ruling was made before the current amendment was implemented, and the Washtenaw County Circuit Court said the plaintiffs had no right to sue. The taxpayers claim the amendment prevents employers from giving benefits to gay couples because it would be recognizing their union as a marriage. The city of Ann Arbor has filed a friend of the court brief in support of the school district.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. So just how cheap is Chinese labor? A Bureau of Labor Statistics consultant in China has concluded that factory wages in China averaged 64 cents an hour in 2002. In the U.S., it was $22.11. Average hourly wages for foreign factory workers rose 12% in 2003, but in the U.S., they rose just 4%. China has roughly 38 million factory workers, and its cities another 71 million work in manufacturing outside cities. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Moving toward a bright and sparkling future. By returning democracy to the United States of America, how one person at a time, that's you, that's me, that's the people we talk with, step by step, building once again democracy here in the United States. Boy, I'm just looking here at this, the Wall Street Journal today did a pretty good analysis of George W.'s policies, his budget, rather. Education programs would take a $528 million cut, less than 1% of its discretionary budget, but its first cut since 1995. The budget would eliminate 48 programs, including $1.2 billion in vocational education programs. So much for kids who aren't going to be able to go into college and get the professions and need vocational training. They are up the creek, as they say. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website. You want to drop into the chat room. Let's go to the telephones. Debbie in North Carolina has been patiently waiting. Debbie, thanks so much for waiting.
Hi, Tom. Listen, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this New World Order religion. The guest that you had on talked about it quite a bit.
Yes. She was calling, this is specifically Dominionism, which is
right.
The theory.
Well, they're, I think they're one and the same. I mean, I've done a lot of research on both, and the reason being is my ex-hairdresser, she is into this, and I cannot tell you how brainwashed these folks are. They're very scary, and General Boykin, you know, who's a PNAC-er.
Yeah, who just got a promotion.
Yes, I know. He went to her church. They're very organized. And, you know, I'm a Christian, and I've known this woman for years and years. And I tried to talk to her about the insanity of forcing another religion and a distorted type of religion down, you know, someone that doesn't have the same belief throat, so to speak. I'm a little nervous here.
It's okay.
But
it's just you and me.
Yeah, right. I guess I just want your guests to know that, you know, when we speak of the teachings of Christ, he did not promote killing innocent people. He didn't promote war.
Quite the opposite, in fact.
Exactly. And when trying to speak with her and several of her ilk about this...
Her being your ex-hairdresser.
Yes, yes. You cannot get through. She, you know, they have an answer for everything. You know, she called me the peacemaker, the soldiers are the warriors. She talked about Armageddon is coming. It will be here soon. All the ministers across the country are talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's these people are organized. They've infiltrated North Carolina. I mean, she even had a little voting guide, you know, when I went in to see her.
Yeah, George Bush, the Republican, well, actually, it wasn't the Republican Party that distributed them. It was the Moral Majority. They distributed 80 million of them in 2004, some 40 million of them in the year 2000. And the voting guides are, well, you can describe it, I'm sure, better than I.
Oh, it was just unbelievable. But
for example, give me an example. I haven't seen these voting guides other than having seen them described. The church that I go to, they didn't pass them out. So I, you know,
this was a front group. It was a front group that came to Charlotte, North Carolina, set up shop and distributed these. But basically, they didn't concern any social issues. They were only issues about, do you believe in killing an unborn baby?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe it's okay for two men to have sex? You know, and
as if those are the only issues that define morality in contemporary society.
Exactly. And this woman, honestly, she's the sweetest woman.
Yeah.
But you can't get through. I mean, I spent hours talking to her, and, you know, she believes that Bush was chosen by God to lead this country. That's what her ministers are telling her and telling all of these other churches. And she also said we have to reach out to the five Middle Eastern countries that need us and convert them all to Christianity. It's all part of the PNAC plan. It was horrifying.
Yeah.
To listen to her speak.
And it was good people who burned the witches at the stake in the 17th century in Massachusetts for 100 years. It was good people who led the Inquisition.
Exactly. You know, what do we do? I am so frustrated. I've lost many friends. It happened to my neighbor too. The same group got her.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jesus did his best to say, hey, don't go down that road. Instead, go down the road if somebody slaps one cheek, slap the other. If they take your coat, give them your cloak. If they make you walk a mile, walk 2 miles. Look what they did to him. There is, however, that's the bad news. The good news is you read the writings of St. John. St. John of the Cross, for example, his book Dark Night of the Soul, which for me was just a turning point in my life when I was a teenager. Teresa of Avila, Interior Castle, the Little Flowers of St. Francis, the Catholic mystics, the Protestant mystics. Read Meister Eckhart, the writings of Meister Eckhart, a 15th or 16th century German Protestant mystic. And you get it that within these institutionalized religions, there is something very powerful. And I'm just speaking to the Christianity part of it. In Judaism, people find the same thing in the study of Kabbalah and Torah. And yeah, of course, in Hinduism and Buddhism and whatnot. And I think that the solution to this is, number one, to point it out. These folks have been operating under the radar. Ralph Reed talks about how you have to act like a thief in the night. You have to.
Right.
He calls it guerrilla warfare. It's got to be done under the radar screen. It's got to be done secretly. Ralph Reed is very, some of his memos have now come out.
He's very frightening.
Yeah, and so I think number one, we have to talk about it, and number two, I think it's important for those people who are motivated by religion and spirituality to encourage them to go deep into their faith. And to acknowledge the fact that this country is not just this country, the democracy does not work when it has been taken over by people who claim that they have divine knowledge. Democracy works best when it's taken over by we, the people, the majority of the people, when there's a document, a constitution that defines a republic, that limits the behavior of the majority so that the rights of the minorities are protected, including religious minorities. And accommodates the needs and the desires of the majorities.
You know, it's so sad because I'm sure in her situation and many others, her husband is on Social Security disability because he can't work. He's sick. She owns a very small business. These are the people that are somehow being lured into this cult, and it is a cult.
Yeah, and George W. Bush gave them $40 billion last year. $40 billion. And,
I know.
And there's more to come. There's more to come.
I'll say this real quick, and then I know you need to go. There's a great documentary on Link TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's Government and God. And I watched it last week. I'm sure they'll play it again. It's well worth watching, but it talks about how so many social programs have been cut, and now those programs they're funded through faith-based groups, and they're only Christian.
Yeah.
Hardcore right-wing.
And Moonies. The Moonies, Moonies have a big chunk of this.
They're kind of all in the same, I think.
Yeah, well, politically, anyway. But you see, here's the point. I'm gonna let you go, Debbie. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. I've got to move along. We got a bunch of other callers here, but the point that I think is so important is that when James Madison vetoed the bill, his first veto when he became president of the United States in 1809, his first veto, which I believe occurred in 1809. Was to veto a bill that granted money to a church in Washington, D.C. to provide for the poor. And he said, if we as a society, I'm paraphrasing, he said, if we as a society are going to decide that we are going to care for the poor, and that's a noble gesture and it's something that we should do. Back then they had these things called poorhouses that they ran, where the poor lived and worked. He said, if we are going to care for the poor, we must do it as a government. And the reason why it's important that we as the government do it rather than giving money to the churches to do it is that the churches will then become dependent upon handouts of the government and ultimately will become corrupted from their mission of sharing the word and the belief of their church. In other words, the whole point, and the founders were so clear about this, and this is what people don't understand, the whole point of the wall of separation between church and state, in some small part, was to protect government from religion. But in a much larger sense, at least as you read the writings of James Madison, who was the most outspoken of the founders on this, along with Jefferson, the larger reason was that the churches themselves get corrupted by this. And right now, what I'm seeing is that this administration is aggressively corrupting the churches, dragging them into the political arena, getting them to promulgate propaganda, using them, just exploiting them as agents of partisan politics. And this does harm the churches themselves. It harms their mission of saving souls, of spreading the word, of making this a better world. This is destructive to religion as well as to government. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Greg in Westport, Connecticut on the line. Hey, Greg, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How you doing? I wanted to comment about that caller from Louisiana. Maybe you've already talked about this. I came in a bit late today. I just want to say I think a lot of people don't distinguish between a nuclear program and nuclear weapons. The fact is that there are about 44 countries that use nuclear power, and that includes France, Russia, even some Muslim countries like Tunisia, Vietnam, and things like that. So you say, well, why don't the Iranians have a right to have nuclear power as we do, as the Israelis do, and others do? And then people can say, well, you know, we know we'll use it responsibly. Well, what was the one nation in the world that used nuclear power against the civilian population? That would be us.
Yeah, and that's a whole other argument about whether that was a responsible use of it. But here's the thing about Iran, and this is where I agree with John in Shreveport. Iran has admitted, they have admitted, that they were using their peaceful nuclear weapons program. They were dealing with K.H. Khan or whatever, A.Q. Khan, the guy from Pakistan, the nuclear arms dealer who is running around loose now because he's got the goods on George W. Bush and on and on what's his name, Musharraf, the head of Pakistan. He could blackmail both of them, so they're not, neither one of them are willing to nail this guy. But he was selling to Iran information and technology about how to convert that peaceful weapons program into a bomb-making program.
That's true, but you get into another issue, though.
Well, exactly, and that leads to the question of, you know, at what point and to what extent do we take action to stop that? And for example, are we going to try and disarm Pakistan? You want a country that is not only Islamic, but is militantly Islamic, fervently in favor of Osama bin Laden. It's Sunni Muslim. The 80 to 90% of the population thinks that Osama bin Laden should not only be president of their country, but should be president of the world.
Yeah.
And you have a government that is hanging on by a thread, and Musharraf is not going to live forever, and there's no clear line of succession. You look at Pakistan. Should we be taking out the Pakistani, bomb?
Yeah, and if you can, and I can just add one thing to that. If you were Iran, would you not want to have a nuclear weapon? Because look at what happens. You're North Korea, you have a nuclear weapon, you don't get attacked. You're Iraq, you don't have a nuclear weapon, you do get attacked. I think a lot of these smaller nations feel that that's their only recourse anymore, to have a nuclear weapon, because otherwise, you know, we'll attack them.
Right. It makes perfect sense as a defensive move. And in fact, that was the theory that was put forth in the United States. And I forget who invented the phrase mutual assured destruction. But it was back in the 50s. And the idea that if the Soviets are going to build nuclear weapons, we're going to build nuclear weapons. If they're going to point them at our cities, we're going to point ours at their cities, so that if they start a war, we will, you know, we're both going to die. But that's the way that you prevent the war from happening at all, is by saying if this happens, the price will be so high to both of us that we both have an incentive for it not to happen. And the folks in Iran, apparently. Now, you know, the old bad news was that the folks in Iran were apparently thinking, hey, we better get a nuclear weapon quick. Otherwise, George W. is going to come after us after he came after Iraq, because they said that they openly said that they didn't have one. They provided the United Nations with 14,000 pages of documentation proving that they didn't have one. And they invited the inspectors in and gave them absolutely free rein in the country to look anywhere they wanted. And the UN was very quickly coming to the opinion that there was nothing there. And, you know, within 2 weeks, they said they'd have it wrapped up. And George says, we can't wait 2 weeks. We got to invade right now. And you know, surprise, surprise. Yeah. But we're not, as you said, we're not invading North Korea. I guess the good news is that Iran has now said, yes, we had that program and we've stopped it. They're trying to do a Libya. You know, they're trying to become more part of the nations of the world.
I think they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, no matter what.
I suspect so, and the reason why is because they're sitting on so much oil.
Yep, exactly.
Ten minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school. They go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
The mammoths and mastodons were no match for people and warm weather. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The Earth has gone through numerous ice ages, and the last of them ended about 10,000 years ago. It was followed by a mass extinction of large mammals. Some researchers say human activity and climate change created a 1-2 punch that wiped out the big animals. Anthony Barnosky is a paleontologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He led a team of researchers who tried to determine the causes of the extinctions at the end of the ice age.
The bottom line is that we found some parts of the world where you can fairly conclusively demonstrate that it was a climate change that led to certain species going extinct in that part of the world. Other parts of the world where you can fairly conclusively demonstrate that humans had a very major role.
People have long speculated that overhunting led to the extinctions of great creatures such as the mammoths, the saber-toothed cat, and ground sloths. Barnosky says rapid changes in the Earth's climate, in other words, global warming, also put the big animals under stress. And he says human changes to the environment itself were yet another factor. Barnosky says we should pay attention to the events that happened 10,000 years ago. He says our impact on the environment today could lead to the same sort of mass extinctions.
What's going on today is humans disturbing animal habitats by indirect means more than has ever been the case in the past. Plus, our activities have also stimulated climate change, which is outside the rates and magnitudes of what's gone on in the past.
Barnosky's research was published last October in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
And what might that be that's coming, Leonard?
The war against disorder from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Yeah, you must just keep repeating that to yourself over and over and over again. On this, we were out at this conference, and I met another couple who are moving to Canada. I can't believe it. I said, I'm sorry, I am staying here. I am fighting to the bitter end. This is my nation. I am not giving it up. And back to George Bush's budget, just to wrap up our day here, and thanks so much for being with us all these 3 hours. In the Justice Department budget, the hardest hit program, this from today's Wall Street Journal, which has a great summary of the budget and what's going on. The Justice Department budget, the hardest hit program was the Community-Oriented Policing Service. It's called the COPS program, COPS program, and Justice Assistance Grants. The programs which provided grants for local police were cut by more than $1 million. $1 billion. Promoting criticism from the International Association of Chiefs of Police, which includes 15,000 police chiefs and law enforcement executives in the U.S. and abroad, said Joseph Estley, chief of the Hartford, Vermont. Hey, how about that? Vermont made the Wall Street Journal. Chief of the Hartford, Vermont. I expected that to be Connecticut. Police Department and President of the LACP, the IACP, the International Association of Chiefs and Police. This administration, he says, talks about homeland security, but then guts funding for the very programs that help secure our homeland. It's funny, last night we were on a flight from Los Angeles to Chicago, and we had a 30-minute connection in Chicago to catch our plane from Chicago to Vermont, and we had to change terminals. And I thought, that's not a lot of time. And there was a flight that left a half hour earlier out of Los Angeles for Chicago. So I went over and I said, you know, can you put us on that earlier flight? Well, that way we'll have an hour when we get to Chicago. These are both United Airlines flights. And she said, I'm sorry, we can't. The Homeland Security Department has said that you have to fly with your bags, because that way if somebody puts a bomb in a bag, you want to make sure that they're on the airplane, and that'll discourage people from putting bombs on bags and getting on airplanes with them. This is assuming that nobody's interested in suicide deaths, but then setting aside that logic. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, by the way, are they also screening the cargo? Now, I'm not talking about the checked bags. I'm talking about, you know, the cargo that's in the bottom of the plane. And she was unsure. So this is not, you know, a spokesperson for United Airlines here that I'm quoting or anything, but she was unsure. I'm pretty sure, you know, from all the news that I'm seeing, that no, we're still not screening the cargo in airplanes. We're still looking at 2 or 3% of what's coming into our ports. We're cutting the resources to our cops. We're cutting funding for bioterrorism training and prevention. Could it be that this administration really doesn't think that there's a threat, that they just want to hype it up when it's election time? Or could it be that they're really stupid? Which is it? I'll leave that to you to decide. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's both. Who knows? Who knows? Anyhow, it's the Tom Hartman Program, where being progressive never felt so good. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want